Welcome to The Informer, Joy 94.9's nightly news and current affairs program, and your link to the stories that matter. We are committed to bringing you the day's most important news and current affairs stories from an LGBTI perspective. If it matters to the LGBTI community, we will cover it. We want to hear from you. Join the conversation, SMS 0427 Joy 949 or email on air at joy.org.au or follow us on Twitter at The Informer Joy.
Australia is the greatest multicultural country in the world. We've welcomed people from across the globe to our shores, and in the process, we've all been enriched. And on the 21st of March, it's Harmony Day, and we celebrate all the great diversity which this country has to offer, as well as the fact that we've integrated so many people so well, celebrating this great multicultural nation.
It's Wednesday, the 21st of March. Welcome to your nightly news and current affairs show, The Informer. I'm your host, Tom. That audio was the Minister of Multicultural Affairs and Citizenship, Alan Tudge, speaking about Harmony Day, which is today. Harmony Day is an opportunity to share our cultural heritage and celebrate what it means to be Australian, recognising our culturally diverse society and celebrate Australian multiculturalism. Tonight on The Informer, it's no joking matter with the announcement that HIV prevention pill PrEP will be available Australia-wide from April 1st. We head to the ACT and find out about their replacement for Safe Schools, funded by the Labor government, the Safe and Inclusive Schools Initiative resources. We find out what the program means for school environments, creating a more inclusive and accepting learning environment for LGBTIQ young people around the ACT. We also check in with the Inner City Legal Centre on last week's family court decision to not require children with gender dysphoria to seek court approval to undergo surgery in Australia.
This is The Informer, Joy's nightly news and current affairs program. We want to hear from you. Join the conversation, SMS us on 0427 Joy 949, email on air at joy.org.au or add us on Twitter at The Informer Joy.
The HIV prevention pill PrEP will be available on the Pharmaceutical Benefits Scheme from April 1st, giving Australia its greatest opportunity yet to drive serious reduction in HIV transmission. DNR Curie reports on what this means.
PrEP stands for pre-exposure prophylaxis. It involves HIV-negative people taking a tablet a day of an antiretroviral drug to protect them and prevent HIV infection. Today, the Minister for Health took a critical step in helping to end the transmission of HIV infection in Australia with the announcement that PrEP will be available from the 1st of April on the pharmaceutical benefit schedule. This means instead of paying $2,496 per year for the medicine, people using PrEP will pay a maximum of only $39.50 per monthly script, with a concession payment paying just $6.40. Daryl O'Donnell, the Chief Executive of the Australian Federation of AIDS Organisation, AFAO, tells us more.
This is incredibly exciting news. So we had the PBAC recommendation to list PrEP just earlier in February. And so it's now moved very, very quickly from that to this announcement today that PrEP will be listed on the PBS on 1 April. So that really is quite a short turnaround in terms of making sure that, you know, everyone who can benefit from PrEP has access as early as possible. I think there's absolutely no doubt that there's been an incredible groundswell of community activism and advocacy and of brokering and advocacy from organisations as well, including AFAO, to really drive this through. And the advocacy from the community, the incredible interest in PrEP and uptake of PrEP has no doubt sent all of the right signals that this is a much needed and much welcome drug. So we really need to capitalise on this decision now. So we've made a huge step forward today with this announcement. And I think we'll look back on this announcement today in years to come and really recognise this as a really important moment in Australia's response and in the gay community's response to HIV. But of course, PrEP's only one part of the puzzle. And what we need in addition to PrEP is all of that intensive education and outreach and support for communities that mean that people not only know about PrEP and its availability, but also have access to the other information they need to look after themselves and their partners to be accessing treatment. I'm not sure we can get to virtual elimination by 2020. I think it's absolutely the right goal for us to be aiming for, to really drive HIV transmission rates in Australia to very low levels. But that's now only a couple of years away. But it is the right goal. We should be pushing ourselves as hard as we can as a community to get HIV down to the very, very lowest rates possible. So we're really happy to support that goal. And I think it's impossible to get there without PrEP. But it's not all of the puzzle. And more is needed. And I think we recognise that in the community. The government has been very responsive to this message. I think the Minister for Health has been very clear that PrEP is important, but more needs to be done. And the government's now developing an 8th national HIV strategy. So part of our advocacy with the government is to make sure that they understand that PrEP alone won't get us to the goal, that support for our organisations, support for our communities is absolutely part of what's going to get us there in the end.
PrEP is 99% effective at preventing HIV transmissions. This announcement represents a significant advancement in Australia's HIV response. But we're going a step further. The government is also providing $1.2 million over 5 years for education and awareness activities for both prescribers and affected communities about PrEP and HIV. Currently, the government is finalising the development of the 8th National HIV Strategy, which will provide the roadmap to help us continue to make dramatic reductions in new infections and improvements in health outcomes. The federal government also providing $800,000 each year to community organisations, including the Australian Federation of AIDS Organisations and the National Association of People with HIV Australia, for education and awareness on HIV prevention. They're also providing $4.4 million over 2 years to support translational research activities to improve diagnosis, treatment and prevention of blood-borne viruses, including HIV.
It is a formal process. So the government, you know, in putting something on the PBS, they've got to be absolutely assured that this is good for taxpayers. And so as much as we've wanted PrEP listed, it has been really important that the government gets the right price for the drug, and they've now been able to do that. I think under the current minister, Greg Hunt, he's really taken a personal interest in this issue, and I think he really understands the public health case here. For a long time in HIV, we were doing pretty well by global standards and had a lot to be proud of. But I think in the last 5, 6, 7 years, we've become increasingly aware that, you know, actually we could be doing a lot better. New technologies, whether it's self-testing, whether it's PrEP, whether it's rapid testing, all of these things provide new tools, new ways of actually driving HIV to ever lower levels. But we need to be fully exploiting those tools. And I think the minister really understands the opportunity that all of that offers and is really keen to work towards that. And certainly that's what we're encouraging him to do. We can't do this without support for our workforces, for our educators working on the ground, and that support is desperately needed, and that's what we hope will be announced as part of the launch of the 8th National HIV Strategy.
That was Dean Arcuri speaking to Daniel O'Donnell, the Chief Executive of the Australian Federation of AIDS Organisations.
There is still more to come on Joy's The Informer, the news program from an LGBTI perspective.
While the federal government withdrew financial support for Safe Schools, the Labor government in the Northern Territory has taken over funding of Safe Schools, but with some amendments. The Safe and Inclusive Schools Initiative resources ensures staff in the Northern Territory are well equipped with the skills needed to create safe environments for all students. Free from bullying and unlike Safe Schools, membership is not compulsory, with it being up to each school to decide how it will use resources. Dean Arcuri reports.
The Safe Schools program was developed by La Trobe University and first rolled out in Victoria in 2010 and found resources such as All of Us drawing criticism that they were providing a space for social engineering in schools. The federal government dropped funding for the Safe Schools program Australia-wide, but Victoria's Labor government increased their funding. New South Wales are developing a more comprehensive anti-bullying program, with South Australia very proud of the program they now have in place, with Queensland principals left to fund training from their own budgets. The Labor government in the Northern Territory, however, have developed their own resources to assist schools and teachers to better support LGBTIQ students who just want to learn and be a part of the school environment without fear of bullying, misgendering or miscommunication, with the Safe and Inclusive Schools Initiative resources. I spoke to Tim Baventon, the Executive Director of the Sexual Health and Family Planning ACT. They hold the contract for the ACT Education Directorate to deliver the program on behalf of and with the support of a range of community organisations. I spoke to him about the resources and what changes have been made.
In one way, we view the school community as the client rather than individual teachers or the principal or students or parents or carers separately. We view the school community as a site where lots of really important things happen for LGBTI young people alongside, you know, non-LGBTI young people. And we want school communities to be safe, welcoming, inclusive spaces for everybody, regardless of sexuality, regardless of gender identity or presentation or intersex variation. And that schools have asked over a long period of time for some assistance around navigating those particular areas and what they mean for a school community to be welcoming and inclusive of diverse sexualities and diverse gender identity. It's been essential to us from the outset of doing this work to make sure that we have a coalition of community-based organisations, both in the health and the community services kind of space working with us. We don't claim to have all of the community connections and experience and expertise that's required to make this kind of engagement with schools work. And so it's really important that we have those partners who support the work that we're doing directly, but that also get involved in ensuring that it's done in really appropriate ways. I think most of us can reflect back on our schooling, whether it was, you know, very recently or decades ago, and know that in particular around sexual orientation, sexuality identity, and also in the way that gender gets policed or gets expressed in school communities, that school is not always a really great place. And for some people, it's actually been a really awfully horrific place. So I think we've got a lot of information, both in lived experience and from good Australian research, that says school is not a great place for all young people, but that school has an opportunity to be a really fantastic place for including everybody, for being a training ground for the rest of our lives around how we live in communities with people who are very different from ourselves, as well as with people who are like ourselves. So, yeah, we see the school as a really essential part of how we build the kind of community we want to live in. And for the time that we're at school, whether that's as students or as teachers working there or as parents and carers attached to school communities, we want school communities to be the kind of community we want to be in for that period of time as well. So having the program, having an initiative like the Safe and Inclusive Schools Initiative is all about trying to support schools in the areas where they maybe feel less confident, less capable, want some more professional expertise or support around either individual student needs or how to actually do inclusive education. So really we're seeing it as a suite of capacity building support for schools rather than just a single intervention or a single program.
Principal Michael Battinelli from the ACT Principals Association agreed that resources like this create a more inclusive learning environment for all because the school's environment is better informed about the needs of LGBTIQ students.
To be quite frank, I think change in any school leads from the principal through to the classroom teacher, and I think to bring about a deep understanding of a very rich, inclusive agenda in a school, this approach from our ACT directorate is enlightening. But it also supports the messages we've been sending to our directorate and working with the likes of Tim over a number of years around raising awareness around the needs of young people. And I'm a secondary principal, so around adolescents as they're reaching adulthood, but also making sure that we understand deeply that nature of safety and how kids feel safe and connected to a school. So I don't want to wax lyrical around this. The reality is we need to build capacity in the school so teachers understand every child in their class will have an anticipation of what might be presented to them that they may not have previously been able to be receptive to if a student has got an LGBTI direction with their life. And that's an understanding that we, in general, as educators, we probably weren't very good at in the past, but I'm assuring you now, as we move forward, we'll get a lot better at it. It's not only the resource, but it's the message it sends to the community, it's parents. As a parent, I have a daughter that came out some years back, and I wasn't prepared for it, but I adapted very quickly, and I'm celebrating that now. And it's just a wonderful thing amongst our family that we're part of a bigger community now, which is really exciting. I think within a school, I think there's a sense of that as well, that diversity is great to talk about, but you've actually got to do something about it. And that's the relationships that kids are starting to, I'm building within my school, and my colleagues talk about it in their schools. This is around in the ACT. But it's also the opportunity for kids don't have to be silent anymore. Everyone has a voice, and we mean it. And kids can be proud of themselves. And that's a really important feature of, I think, the safe and inclusive strategy that we're seeing. And that's why many of us, you know, bought into the previous iteration of this sort of work that I'm not here to talk about. But I think that certainly helped the way we went about that as a school, but certainly as a system. There was certainly an inclusive agenda that was rich that we were able to strengthen. I'm pleased also to say that our PNC association, the parent community, is very much behind this initiative. And that's another support because in each school, under the governance of each school, you've got a PNC. And they're your eyes and ears to the community. So in supporting principals and school leaders and teachers, there's a whole network of engagement and support for this initiative. One thing I'd like to say, though, I think the involvement of the Sexual Health and Family Planning ACT, that's been something that particularly has been focusing on the latter years of schooling. And on every second year, my senior college would have that agency come in and work with our kids around sexual health. And that's built up a deep trust and understanding around the issues that are apparent to the older adolescents. But now we're actually doing more work around the broader question of individuals and their identity. And I think the understanding that comes from the community health sector is giving us a greater license to act and support because we're well informed, and that's where the resource comes in.
That was Tim Bevinton, the Executive Director of the Sexual Health and Family Planning ACT, and Principal Michael Battinelli from the ACT Principals Association.
This is The Informer, Joy 94.9's nightly news and current affairs program, and your link to the stories that matter.
We now continue Dean O'Curry's report into the Northern Territory's Safe and Inclusive Schools Initiative resources as he speaks with Tim Bevinton, the Executive Director of the Sexual Health and Family Planning ACT.
The differences between the previous alliteration and the Northern Territory's Safe and Inclusive Schools Initiative resources are not so vast. Tim Baventron, the Executive Director for Sexual Health and Family Planning ACT, shares with us what they are and why they needed to be changed to reflect the needs of the ACT schooling communities.
Well, there's some things that are very similar to, and we delivered the National Safe Schools Coalition program in the ACT as well between 2014 and 2016. The ACT didn't continue under those arrangements from 2016, and we spent 2017 working with a widened stakeholder group to build the Safe and Inclusive Schools Initiative model to reflect both what had really worked for us already in the Safe Schools Coalition and to reflect certain things about the Canberra community that were different from how Safe Schools Coalition operated in different states and territories around the country. So one of the big differences, and it's not really widely known around the country, is ACT laws and regulations around anti-discrimination are actually some of the quietly leading legislation in the country around protected attributes for anti-discrimination. And, you know, I don't think Safe Schools Coalition ever operated on a real one-size-fits-all kind of model. But to the extent that we were delivering a national program, some of those kinds of different factors in each state and territory weren't as easy to bring to the fore, particularly as the program came under more fire and as people really started to focus on just the content of the All of Us teaching program. So here in the ACT, we had a very strong community support for what we were doing in Safe Schools Coalition, and that continues around the initiative. We have a particular legislative environment that affects how schools need to ensure that their communities and their practices aren't discriminatory. And that is a little bit different to what's true in other states and territories. Not radically so, but there are some important differences that we needed to reflect. And we also had that strong coalition of support from community and health organisations that we took into the Safe Schools Coalition and that are supporting the development and implementation of the initiative as well. So while it is a different program, it's under ACT government funding, it's very strong relationship with the Education Directorate, we are still continuing to bring a range of community organisations together with the best of their expertise and experience to make sure that school communities get the support that they need. We're also not assuming that this resource will be around forever, that we have a limited window where we can really build the capacity of schools so that certain things become business as usual and that they don't require outside agencies to assist them to do that. That's like assisting students who maybe want to transition or affirm gender at school. It will be about how anti-homophobic language is challenged within school communities. We believe that schools and school staff are completely capable of addressing these things with some good support in place to get started. Lots of other areas of school life don't require outside agencies to make things happen, and we're hoping that the initiative will actually be a strengthening of school practice in the areas of supporting students, staff and families around gender diversity and sexual diversity. We're really proud of the work that we did before. We wanted to be able to do what we intended from the very outset in Safe Schools Coalition, which is evolve the program, evolve the support to schools on the basis of the experience of working with schools. So at no point did we think that the national program would become really rigid and static and restricted. And this for us is a return to what we intended to achieve. So the goal is the same. We want schools to be safe, inclusive, welcoming places for everybody. And we particularly know that sexuality and gender expression are the site of a lot of stereotyping, a lot of prejudice and discrimination, and sometimes of bullying and harassment. So those big goals are the same. How we get there necessarily means something's happened a bit differently. So the big differences in the ACT initiative are we don't have a membership model. We'll work with any school community in any system, Catholic, independent or government, on the terms that they want to engage with us. Now, that might mean some schools, and definitely some schools, will want to be very public about their involvement. Others might be connecting with us because they have individual student needs that need to be kept quite confidential and private. So not everybody's going to know necessarily which schools that we engage with. That will depend very much on the circumstances and the issues that a school connects with us on. But we will continue to be open to working in very public and transparent ways with those schools that want to work that way, and very quietly and confidentially with schools that need some quiet input in that kind of model. So that's a big difference, is there's not a requirement to be a member before you can access support. We aren't producing classroom resources like all of us. We will be helping teachers identify appropriate teaching and learning materials for use in their classrooms rather than generating curriculum resources. And otherwise, we are still focused on how you can support school communities on their own individual journeys through this kind of process. And look, that honestly, that feels a lot like what delivering the Safe Schools Coalition program felt like between 2014 and 2016 for us. So we feel like it's a continuation of the work, but with some significant changes and some important changes that mean that local communities feel more involved and have more ownership over how the initiative rolls out.
After a break from creating a more inclusive schooling community, Tim, Sexual Health and Family Planning ACT, and the schooling environment are ready to get back into doing what they do best, creating a safe, inclusive and strong learning environment for all students across the ACT, no matter your gender or sexual identity.
We're really looking forward to getting back on track. We've had a longer hiatus than I think any of us would have hoped off the back of the really aggressive attacks on the Safe Schools Coalition. So we're really pleased to now be able to be really public-facing and explaining what it is that we do. We're really pleased to have brought the parent and citizen peak bodies into the discussion and along with us, and their support is really essential. They do support this initiative, and they generally supported the Safe Schools Coalition as well. And I think the parent community probably felt the least connected with what was happening previously, and so we really wanted to make sure that they were included and on board. This is about rainbow families, it's about PFAG families, and it's also about families who just see that it's important to have a school community where their kid will be looked after regardless of who they are, especially when we don't necessarily know who someone is during our schooling years. When we look back, I think as adults, we can see that there's a lot to learn from people who were same-sex attracted at school. But generally that means talking to adults who later affirm a gay or lesbian or bisexual identity as adults. What's sometimes missing from that picture is the message of people who did experience same-sex attraction but maybe didn't go down a particular identity route in their later years around what schooling felt like for them. So we really want to build a place that's about everybody but that understands that some expressions of gender and some expressions of sexuality have been stigmatised in the past. And that means we've got to pay special attention to the way that school communities welcome and celebrate diversity, make it visible in positive ways, but don't let the whole schooling agenda become dominated by just one aspect of our lives and ourselves. So it's a kind of complex line that we're walking, and we're really pleased to have a really broad coalition of people walking it with us.
That was Dean Arcuri looking at the ACT's Safe and Inclusive Schools Initiative resources with Tim Bevinton, the Executive Director of Sexual Health and Family Planning ACT.
This is The Informer on Joy 94.9.
Children with gender dysphoria no longer have to seek court approval to undergo surgery in Australia. It was decided last week by the family court that they will no longer intervene in cases where children with gender dysphoria have the permission of their parents and treating doctors to undergo surgery. Principal solicitor of last week's case where the decision was made, Hilary Kincaid from the Inner City Legal Centre, speaks to us now.
In November last year, the full court of the family court decided that it wasn't necessary in all cases for transgender young people to have to go to court before they could get oestrogen or testosterone. And it had previously been mandatory regardless of if the parents were in support. And that meant that the law in this area about stage 3 treatment, which is surgical interventions, and in this case the type of treatment was top surgery, that meant that the law was a little bit uncertain. So we filed an application on behalf of some previous clients of ours who we've represented in an application for testosterone for their son in relation to top surgery. And we filed that late last year, and it was heard last Wednesday. The court concluded that in circumstances like our client's case, and I'll use the anonymised name of Matthew, that's not the child's real name, it is not necessary to make an application to the court before stage circumstances where both parents were in support. There was no disagreement between the treating medical practitioners about whether the child was competent to give his own consent or whether he should have the surgery. And there was medical evidence to show that the treatment was therapeutic. It's quite exciting, and the decision that came out on Friday builds on the logic of the full court's decision in Rekelvin, which was the case about stage two last year, and determines that because this treatment is therapeutic and because gender dysphoria is a recognised medical condition, there is no need for there to be a court application where there's no disagreement. This decision and the decision last year don't cover children who are in the care of the minister, so there may be future cases that deal with that issue. And I think that there is a recognition that the things that we say courts are for, which is to resolve disagreement, to resolve controversy by examining the evidence, that simply doesn't apply where everyone is in support. It may be that because a child is in the care of the minister that there's an argument that the court has more of a supervisory jurisdiction than when someone is in the care of their parents. But I think that the logic of these two decisions would certainly affect any future decisions of the family court. I wouldn't say that we've done ourselves out of a job just yet, but this certainly takes the majority of these cases out of the courts, which is the way that it should be. Where they don't necessarily have parental support, there have been cases. There's been two cases of older transgender children who are, I think, about 17. Two separate cases where they made an application to the court and the court gave them parental responsibility for themselves for the purposes of consenting to this treatment. That might be the form of the application. But if they have one parent who is in support and one parent who is not in support, then the process would probably be that the supportive parent would make an application to the family court for a declaration that this treatment could go ahead. So not so much in terms of the family court, but in New South Wales, if you are a child born in New South Wales and you want to change the record of your sex on your birth certificate, then current law is that you must have had a sex affirmation procedure, which is surgery affecting the reproductive organs. I think that is entirely barbaric and medieval. And one of the things that the ICLC is involved in is law reform in this area, pushing for a change to the New South Wales legislation. We've been practicing in this area for the last nearly 5 years. Specifically with transgender young people, and it has been a real privilege to be able to work with these young people and their parents and to help them to live the lives that they want.
That was Principal Solicitor Hilary Kincaid from the Inner City Legal Centre about last week's family court decision that they will no longer intervene in cases where children with gender dysphoria have the permission of their parents and treating doctor to undergo surgery.
This is The Informer on Joy 94.9.
And that's it for another episode of The Informer, bringing you news and current affairs for Australia's LGBTI communities. A podcast of tonight's Informer will be available to download soon at joy.org.au or on your preferred podcast platform. Don't forget to follow us on social media at The Informer on Joy 94.9 on Facebook and at The Informer on Joy on Twitter. If you have a story or tip you'd like to share with us, get in touch at theinformer@joy.org.au. You've been listening to The Informer on Joy 94.9 with Tom.
This is The Informer on Joy 94.9.